You've likely seen it. You're driving down the road, a car is swerving, and when you pull up next to them at the stoplight, you see their eyes are not on the road. They're down, looking at a cell phone, texting. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. Current law prohibits texting while driving, but police can only enforce that law when pulling a driver over for a separate violation. A bill approved in the Iowa Senate allows cops to pull people over just for texting while driving. We'll talk with a couple state lawmakers about the bill's future and a University of Iowa researcher about the best ways to get drivers to keep their eyes on the road. In the second half, a gas tax is gaining support with the public, even while it's stalling at the State House. Join in on the conversation after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Good afternoon. I'm Clay Masters, live at the Capitol Law Library. We live in a 24-hour society these days. Work and home life are becoming more and more accessible through cell phones. You can text, check email, your Facebook. You can even manage your bank account from your cell phone. Maybe you've done it. I know you've likely seen someone in a car next to you do it. The reality is, it's dangerous. Right now in Iowa, current law prohibits texting while driving, but police can only enforce that law when pulling a driver over for a separate violation. Now, a bill has been approved in the Iowa Senate that allows cops to pull people over just for texting while driving. Has your life been impacted by someone texting and driving? Have you been in a car accident maybe because of it? Do you have an opinion one way or the other? Give us a call, 1-866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. We're on Facebook, or you can email us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. In a moment, we'll talk with a couple lawmakers, but first, Daniel McGeehee, the Director of Human Factors and Vehicle Safety Research at the Public Policy Center at the University of Iowa, is with us. Daniel, welcome to River to River.
Thanks, Clay. Glad to be here.
So first of all, what kind of impacts does texting while driving have on a society?
Well, as you mentioned in your intro, it really is a major issue in our lives. We're seemingly untethered to our cell phones these days, and particularly our smartphones, because we have so many different operations that we're doing with it. We're communicating with our friends, our family, we're Facebooking, we're doing our email, we're just never offline anymore. And so that really impacts how much we feel compelled to seek out that information and respond quickly.
Now, it doesn't seem to have the same kind of stigma as drinking while driving, but it can be just as impairing, just as dangerous.
Yeah, and I think that's a very important point. You know, over time, there are social norms that are very important. Drinking and driving is one that we're still wrestling with. It's still a big issue, but we really include in our conversation when we have a drink, who's going to be the designated driver and those kinds of things. We take a look at other social norms like safety belts. You know, in Iowa, we have just for the drivers over a 93% use rate. So that's really important if you look out over the last 30 years. Child safety seats is another issue. We really know and notice if somebody's not belted, a child's not belted in the back seat.
Now, you've done some research on texting while driving and basically just how to keep people more aware of their surroundings when they're on the road. What has your research shown?
Well, texting and interacting with the phone is really sort of the worst of the worst in the sense that it takes your eyes off the road and your hand off the road while you're doing it. And that kind of attention, what we call visual manual attention, where you're manipulating another object, really takes the most time of your eyes off of the road. And that's really where we see people run into trouble. You only get about 1 3/4 of a second before your car begins to drift out of the lane. So it's not much time. And especially if you're barreling down Interstate 80, you know, you can drive the length of a football field pretty quickly while you're trying to type out that message or text, read your last message.
Now, how does this compare between adults and teens? Do you have any figures as to how much teens are the ones that are texting? I mean, I think that's normally what comes to mind, but a lot of adults are using their cell phone while driving.
Absolutely. And I think our research and others is showing that all age groups are significantly increasing the amount of phone interactions. Even senior citizens now are, they've increased over 100% over time now increasing their interactions with that phone. So it's really something that we see across the board. Teens certainly are completely connected, but you know, those teens are also talking to parents. Parents are talking to their friends. So it's really a greater societal issue.
We're going to talk with some lawmakers in a moment about some of the work that's being done here at the State House. But from your research, what are some of the solutions? What are ways to combat this problem?
First off, I think this is where legislation can be really helpful. When something is known to be illegal and is enforceable, this can really help the conversation in the car, around the dinner table, and so forth. And as we just talked about, you know, sort of changing that social norm over time in terms of really inside the car flagging, you know, your own driver, you know, that you might be a passenger in, saying, hey, don't do that while we drive, being aware of your surroundings, all very important in this conversation. And I think it's important for parents and all of us to be role models that we sort of develop our own policy that we're not going to be texting and being on the phone while we drive, because, you know, kids model their parents' behavior. And if you grow up in a car where your parents are on the phone and texting all the time, you're sure as well are going to be doing that as well.
So how do we change these social norms?
Well, if you look at historically with safety belt legislation, car seats, alcohol, all of those things start with legislative change. And, you know, having a primary law, as the Senate has just passed, is one important first step, because people do really look at that and know that there are some teeth behind it. It's pretty rare for law enforcement to put together a fine for a secondary offense. If you take a look at the number of tickets that have been written across the state since that law was enacted, they're very few. And you won't find very many, if any, folks from law enforcement that think secondary laws work at all.
So, I mean, maybe it goes without saying because of how you just answered that last question, but we already have a law in the books that prohibits it. That's not enough?
Right. It's a secondary offense. And as you mentioned, a police officer needs to find something else as the primary stop before they can issue that secondary ticket.
Where do you draw the line? I know that there's a lot of times where I'm late for something and I've got to plug into my GPS, which happens to be on the phone, and I'm, you know, using that. Is it just texting? You know, when you talk about using websites on your smartphone, how do you draw that line? And then how do you just police it to begin with?
Well, anytime you are manipulating that phone and your eyes are off of the road while you're driving is really the issue. And so sort of the nuance of these laws really needs to be your eyes and hands are off the road rather than concentrating on one particular area. Certainly, GPS systems are an important part of our driving, but really they should be programmed while we're sitting still.
So it's no different than picking up the map and maybe unfolding it a few times. You should just pull the car over, but you can't get arrested for looking at your map while driving.
Certainly, and we know from our own research from 20 years ago, we did some of the first studies on GPS navigation systems before they became so ubiquitous. That paper map is actually more dangerous than a GPS navigation system once it's been programmed. As you point out, when you're rotating that map around, that can be extremely distracting. But a simple turn-by-turn display that you might have is actually much better than a paper map.
Let's bring a couple other people into the conversation. A couple lawmakers, Representative Josh Burns, a Republican from Osage. He's the chair of the House Transportation Committee. Representative Burns, welcome back to River to River.
Well, thanks for having us, Clay.
And also Senator Todd Bowman, a Democratic senator from Maquoketa. He's chair of the Senate Transportation Committee, also in the State House Law Library. Senator Bowman, welcome back to River to River.
Thank you, Clay.
So, Senator Bowman, we'll start with you. What's the status of the bill in the Senate? You passed this, and now it's over to the House?
Yes, we passed it, and it was prior to the second funnel. And what I understand, it went to a different committee rather than the Transportation Committee. I had been working with Representative Burns and Representative Moore, making sure they understood what, you know, our intention was. In fact, I worked hand-in-hand with Senator Kapoutsian, a Republican, on the he's the ranking member in the Transportation Committee, on this bill, trying to make sure everybody knew this was a bipartisan effort. And it got assigned to a different committee, and then it really wasn't assigned to a committee until late Thursday on funnel week, and it basically killed the bill in the normal process of a bill.
And just to be clear, funnel week is that time when lawmakers need to get those priorities. It's a way to keep checks and balances of moving forward with laws that start in subcommittee, go to committee, and so on and so forth. So spell out a little bit what this bill would do. How would it impact the people listening right now driving down the road?
Well, the bill that Senator Capuzzi and I put forward that had strong bipartisan support in the Senate changed texting while driving to a primary enforcement rather than a secondary. That was the big part of it. We also changed the term from texting to electronic communication. So, you know, if you're using Facebook or Snapchatting, any of those kind of mechanisms, emailing, that would all be the same as texting, in other words. And then in listening to the Department of Transportation, they highly suggested that it also be considered a moving violation because you are moving while you're texting and driving. We agreed and decided to put that third component into it. So that's the bill that passed the Senate and sent over to the House.
So how big of a problem is this in Iowa? When you were looking into how you were drafting this legislation, what did you use for stats? How did you find out what how everything was playing out here in the state?
Well, it's an incredible problem. I call it an epidemic. If you drive much, like Representative Burns and myself, you can't make a trip without seeing some very serious impaired drivers in regard to their texting and their vehicles moving all over the place, or it's slowing down, speeding up. And so it's the equivalent of seeing a drunk driver on the road, really. I was driving, and we had about 6 inches of snow. I couldn't even see the lane, and this person wasn't letting me over. I was trying to get out of their way so they could pass, and I thought, oh, you know, he's in a hurry, you know. And no, he had no idea where his surroundings were. He didn't realize the semi was right next to him, and I was over here, and it was just ridiculous, especially in regard to the weather, you know, that this person was so distracted, he was putting us all in peril.
Representative Burns, so this likely won't come up in the Transportation Committee for you. What's the likelihood of it being taken up this legislative session?
Well, I mean, and Senator Bowman's right. I mean, we've hit that second funnel deadline, and I believe it went to a Judiciary Committee is where it got assigned to. I mean, Transportation Committee is, you know, basically we're done meeting for the year and whatever. So, I mean, what could happen is it could go into a standings bill or into a leadership bill. I know that Representative Moore has had some conversations. He would be my vice chair on Transportation Committee, and actually he would be the state representative in conjunction with Senator Bowman. And they have. They've worked very closely on this. And I know that Representative Moore has talked to our leadership a little bit about, you know, what would it take to get some of this language into a standings or a leadership bill. And so I know that he's had that conversation moving forward. But, you know, I think that, you know, Senator Bowman did a great job on his side of getting, because I know it wasn't easy. Sometimes with these bills, it turns into a Christmas tree and everybody wants to hang an amendment on it, and it kind of starts to bog it down. And I think that's probably, you know, kind of what happened on the Senate side a little bit, is that Senator Bowman had to really kind of filter through some things and probably say no to some people on some things they wanted to put on it, which, you know, may have slowed it up a little bit and whatever. But in the end, I think it was a good piece of legislation that he ended up getting done over there and that they moved over to us. So,
Senator Bowman, when the debate was happening regarding this bill, I remember a Republican Senator Brad Zahn of Urbandale saying, why are we trying to legislate driver stupidity? How do you respond to a concern like that that Senator Zahn had?
Well, I believe all our laws have good intentions, and this law is no different. You know, when you look at it, one of the biggest things that I researched and tried to get my hands around was enforcement issues, because what I've heard, even though it's a primary offense, it's still going to be difficult for law enforcement to determine what they were doing, especially when we allow for GPS, we allow some other exceptions. And so it becomes more, how are they going to do this in a manner that still meets the Iowans' expectations as far as not being harassed by the police. And so, you know, that was my biggest concern going into the debate, was how do we enforce it with some sense that it's, you know, it's a good quality bill and the police or law enforcement will have the ability to enforce it the way that we want it enforced. So it became a little bit more, the debate was a little bit, well, you know, shouldn't everybody know to do this? Well, that's the case with everything. And you look at your law library, you got hundreds of law books here. We wouldn't have to have any of them. We could have one page Iowa code if that was the case. And, you know, in all honesty, I think Senator Zahn does care about folks' safety on the road. So it wasn't that he doesn't care. I think he just wanted to kind of make the point that if we just use some common sense out there, we wouldn't have to have these type of laws. But unfortunately, anytime you use the road, you'll see people that aren't. And I'd like to point out one thing that just really made this easy for me to understand, that the Virginia Tech Institute, they had a study where they put these little webcams on their vehicles, and they, you know, the kids and adults that were using them kind of didn't text or drive for about the first month, but after they got used to them, they started going back to their old ways, and they found out through just analyzing through the camera that their eyes were off the road almost 5 full seconds. And if you're going 65 or even 55, that's a long ways. You heard the professional from the University of Iowa talking. That's a long ways to have your – I mean, if you asked – if you dared someone, I dare you to close your eyes for 5 seconds, they and you said, I'll give you $100 if you close your eyes for 5 seconds, they'd never do it. But yet we got hundreds and hundreds of people texting every day going down our interstates and highways.
Daniel, I want to give you a chance to respond to that too. You can't legislate stupidity. What do you say to that?
Yeah, well, I think that the basis of many laws, as is pointed out, goes beyond that. I think really this is part of lawmaking is education. If you look at safety belts and all sorts of other issues, alcohol use, they really go the same way. I think we would all agree that drinking and driving is not something that is a good thing, and that also is pretty stupid. So this is really, I think, like I said in the beginning of the program, really sort of the first cornerstone where people really start to pay attention to these things.
What have other states done, Daniel?
Almost all states now have texting as a primary law. Most, I think there's 48 states now that have texting and driving laws across the board. It's pretty comprehensive. But we're slowly sort of backfilling in to make them primary. But it's really becoming much more of an issue in the public's mind as well. And I should point out that survey after survey really supports such legislation, not only in the surveys that we've done on Iowans who live in rural, medium, and urban communities. We did a survey a couple of years ago before the teen legislation was enacted, and some 99% of all constituents in the state from those size counties support this kind of legislation.
One of the big questions I have regarding this is just how do police enforce this? If, you know, you have a cell phone, you get pulled over, they saw you swerving, maybe you could throw it in the dash. I mean, some of these other states, are they able to confiscate the cell phone to look up your phone record to see when you were using your phone, or how does that work?
Well, law enforcement's job is largely investigative. So if you have a person that's swerving, they want to find out what the problem is. So if you pull them over and they say, well, I was on using my GPS, they can ask some just very simple questions like, well, show me. Just like they can ask to look in your trunk. And so I think, you know, people are pretty compliant about these things. And it's also sort of an opportunity. It's a teachable moment. When you get pulled over for something like that, you're going to really think about it. And so I think it's really part of that conversation.
Senator Bowman, how would the enforcement mechanism work in the bill that your chamber passed?
Well, Clay, some of the states, I'm just going to refer to your question before that you asked how are other states doing it. I think the state of New York, they actually have vehicles that are high above so they can see down into other vehicles. Some are using overpasses and, you know, some type of telescopic lens to see the behavior as they're going on the highway or interstate. And, you know, you also have folks that will, you know, admit to it, or, you know, the police officer has every right if they believe, you know, can we see your phone? Now, it's up to the citizen itself to determine whether they want to comply and give the police officer their phone to show that, no, I'm innocent. Look, you can see that I wasn't texting and driving. Or in case of an accident, Clay, you could possibly, you know, have a warrant and subpoena for the phone itself.
On to another topic briefly. Iowa is one of only a few states in which backseat passengers do not have to wear seatbelts to be compliant with the seatbelt law. Daniel, you've done research on this about the number of Iowans who die in accidents because they're not required to wear seatbelts in the backseat. Certainly something that's also top of mind while we're talking about safety in the car. What does your research show, Daniel?
We just finished a pretty comprehensive survey study of Iowans' perspectives on enhancing some of the safety belt laws. And again, we found pretty overwhelming support for adding those rear-seated passengers. For those of us that do crash research every day, it's something that is really tough when we see crashes where people are unbelted. People tend to forget that the backseat person that's not belted is a projectile, and they can frequently kill the person in the front seat, because when you're into a very high-speed frontal collision, that person comes out. In Iowa, the most common kind of crash are single-vehicle road departures, where we go into the ditch, hit a culvert, we roll over. So it's a pretty big issue, and something that we think should be enhanced here in Iowa.
Moving back to texting while driving, Representative Burns, it sounds like this might not get anywhere this session. What's the likelihood that this is going to come up next year?
Oh, I think it's pretty strong. I think that the Senate did a good job of laying some groundwork on some legislation and kind of, I don't know, working out the kinks, if you will, on what it needs to look like and what people accept. So I think the likelihood's pretty good that that we'd see something next year. And you know, the other thing too is you know, our vehicles have become a technology center. I mean, really. I mean, I don't know if it helps the situation or if it's hindering us, but it's there. It's in front of you all the time, the technology that you have. And I think that, you know, moving forward, we will also start to see technology helping us with this battle. And I think, and I've said this before, is that I think eventually technology will kind of help solve technology. And I think that more hands-free devices, I mean, our trucking industry is already there. I mean, you know, so part of our drivers on the road are to that point already. You know, and there's some things, too, that if there's parents listening and they're concerned about their children and texting and driving and distracted driving, you know, one of the things I did, and my daughter doesn't necessarily like it, but I put this app on her phone. It's a Canary app. And, you know, so it can tell me things about how fast she's traveling. It can tell me, you know, whether or not she had a phone call while she's driving. It definitely tells me if she was texting while she was driving. So it kind of uses a GPS system to, you know, if the vehicle's in motion. It's kind of interesting because it also tells you if she's babysitting for somebody, if they're speeding as well when that phone's in the car. So.
Okay. Well, that's where we're going to have to end things for this half. Thanks to my guests, Daniel McGeehee from the University of Iowa's Public Policy Center, and also Senator Bowman and Representative Burns. You're not going anywhere. They'll be back for the second half, where we'll talk about the likelihood of a gas tax this session. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters here at the Capitol Law Library. In the first half of the show, we were talking texting while driving. We had lots of comments that we couldn't get to. We just want to get to a few. Dan wrote in, said we need the legislation not to protect the texting driver, but to protect the rest of us. Isn't that the same reason we have laws about red lights? We also have Renee writing in that says it's really unfortunate that the bill to make texting while driving a primary offense was funneled so poorly. I would have liked to have seen this bill passed. I drive my son to elementary school in Des Moines every day, and every day I see other parents in their cars texting while they drive their children. No matter how good they think they are at juggling those multiple tasks, driving, being with their children, texting. They are almost always impaired in some way in their driving. They are too slow to react to the light, looking down while making a turn, or moving too slowly with the flow of traffic. Nothing can be as more important as their children's well-being. Also, Jeff wrote in, the number one reason for traffic accidents is speeding. Texting is a concern, but speed and red light cameras will be more effective in reducing injuries and death. All driving distractions should be addressed, not just the texting hype. So those are some of the comments we heard. Also, Sarah tweeted in, I can't count how often I've seen people driving dangerously only to pass and see their head down and phone, stop trying to kill me, she writes. So I'm joined in the State House Law Library by the Transportation Committee chairs in both the Senate and House, Senator Todd Bowman, a Democrat from Maquoketa, and Representative Josh Burns, a Republican from Osage. Gentlemen, how do you respond to some of the things that you're hearing from these people who commented in? Representative Burns?
Well, I valid concerns, valid comments. I hope that last one, I hope she wasn't driving and tweeting.
Yeah, exactly.
But valid concerns, and I'm not quite sure what they wanted with the speeding side of it. If that comment was to reduce our speed limits, or if this person was, I don't know. So, and there's some things too that we've taken a look at this session as well that didn't get a lot of traction, but we're looking at maybe expanding. Part of that is sometimes our right lane laws. And, seems to be more of an issue that we have people that, they like to hang out in that right lane and they're not moving over for traffic flow, which actually creates dangerous situations because all of a sudden you may have somebody that's now passing on the right side of them and it's a blind spot. And I'll be honest with you, sometimes those folks that don't seem to be moving out of the right lane, I've noticed that they're texting. So, they're kind of in a zone and maybe not aware of the people coming up behind them. But I know that's one of the things we discussed on our side, too, was the right lane issues.
Senator Bowman, give you a chance to respond. Also, we got a tweet in asking how lawmakers plan to differentiate between Bluetooth and Siri users and manual texters. So you can see how this opens up all these different areas. How do you respond to that and some of the other concerns?
Well, first of all, I would say the Department of Public Safety did a study, and they went out to some schools, and they found that when they asked the students, how often or how many of you have had your parents actually texting while you're in the vehicle, thinking, maybe 5%, over half of the parents are texting with their kids in the vehicle. So they're being role models, poor role models, and we need to change that mentality. Public education can be a good step in the right direction. One of the common components besides just, showing a deadly accident are pledges. My family, my wife and I, we do not text. Whether our children are in the vehicle or not, we're, using ideas similar to what Representative Burns said he's using with his daughter in regard to making sure our children aren't texting. I have one son that's of driving age now. And so those are important steps for us to take as a society, whether the law changes or not, that we can do in our little part in helping this problem along. As far as the Bluetooth Siri issue, using voice command is legal now, would be legal under our current or the bill that we brought forward to the House. It would still be legal, any kind of voice-activated system.
On to another topic. A solid majority of Iowans oppose raising the state's gas tax, but the support for the idea is slowly increasing. That's according to a current Iowa poll that says 58% of Iowans are against a proposed 10-cent per gallon increase in gas taxes over the next 3 years to help pay for road and bridge repairs. 40% support the idea, 2% are not sure. And just to be clear here, the state's gas tax was last raised in 1989. The current state per gallon fuel tax rates are diesel at 22.5 cents, regular gasoline 21 cents, and ethanol blended gasoline at 19 cents. Would you be deeply financially affected by an increased gas tax? How are the roads in your neck of the state? Weigh in. The number is 1-866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or reach out to us on Facebook. You can email us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Representative Burns, I'm having some deja vu. You were here about a year ago where we were discussing this. How has the conversation changed, or is it changing from where we were a year ago?
Well, you gave the polling numbers there that came from the Des Moines Register, and we finally broke into the 50 percentile there, so that's positive. You know, I think still it's a lot of it is how you ask the question, and I think a lot of it is the education component of this. You know, I would be willing to bet if we ask those people in that poll, you know, did you know that 25 counties in the state of Iowa are bonding for their road projects at the cost of $163 million? I mean, you start to put that into perspective, and you start to talk about the fact that when we're bonding, we're basically taking out a loan, probably anywhere from a 15 to 20-year bond, and the Iowa taxpayer is paying back interest on that bond. I mean, we have absolutely nothing to show for those interest payments. And the other thing is, that falls on the backs of Iowans 100% versus the fuel tax, in which we are actually collecting a user fee or a user tax from those that travel on our roads that may be out of state. So I think, you know, that whole education component, if you had time to phrase that question in a manner that kind of explained that to those people, I guarantee you that your outcomes would be completely different. And you know, in my legislative district, it was kind of funny because there's a blog site, Bleeding Heartland. And Bleeding Heartland was basically blogging on there how it would be a St. Patrick's Day miracle if Josh Burns didn't get a primary opponent because he's been such an outspoken proponent of the fuel tax. I didn't get a primary opponent. And I think that speaks volumes that you know what, people in my district and what I'm finding across the state of Iowa, they are saying we've got to do something with our infrastructure. And, you know, the state of Iowa is we are a net exporter, whether it's agricultural products, whether it's manufacturing products. And for us to keep our economy going and we need to keep these things, you got to have the right infrastructure in place. And, you know, unfortunately, this last week we did see a bridge collapse in Guthrie County. You know, there's still some investigation going into that and why that bridge collapsed. But I just think that, you know, what I've been told is that the weight restrictions of that bridge were at about 8 ton. Well, if you start to think about that, you could have a school bus and a full-size pickup meet each other on that bridge, and you're pushing 8 ton. And so we've got to do something. And what's happening is our county engineers are lowering those weight restrictions, and, you know, we're seeing more and more bridges that are embargoed. And at what point in time, you know, do you just – you've got to do something. You can't just keep adjusting those weights without replacing the bridge. And, you know, I don't want us to be a reactive government. I don't want Senator Bowman and I have to come in here and suddenly there's a demand for the fuel tax because unfortunately had a bus or something that fell through a bridge. I want us to be proactive on this issue. And so you're right. I mean, here we sit a year later. Nothing's been done. I'm disappointed in the fact that last year a lot of the rhetoric was around if we did a property tax relief bill, we could do a fuel tax bill. We got property tax relief. I don't see the fuel tax bill. So I'm a little disappointed in hearing some of that rhetoric last year, and then there was no follow-through, and nobody upheld their end of that bargain. So I don't know. We're continuing to battle. I know Senator Bowman's on board with me on this, and you know, it's unfortunate that really politics is really preventing this from moving forward.
Well, and that was something that Governor Branstad had said last year when property tax was one of those big issues of the big three that got passed last year that had him calling it the most successful legislative session he could remember. Have you had conversations with people from the governor's office about how to move this forward?
You know, I did. I last day of the session last year, I was very disheartened in the fact that we didn't do anything with infrastructure funding, and I ran into one of the governor's staffers, and I just said, you know, what happened? I said I thought this was kind of the agreement that if, you know, we did property tax reform, we could do a fuel tax. And basically the response back to me was, well, you didn't get it to the governor's desk. Well, you know, that may be true and everything. And I guess at the end of the day, you know, Senator Bowman represents the Senate. I represent the House. And my desk represents my 31,000 people that I represent back home. And I guess it's, you know, I can't rely on another chamber to get this done or the governor's office to get this done. I got to work on behalf of the House of Representatives and what I can do in my chamber. And so that's really kind of the approach I've taken this year is just, you know what, I got to focus in on just getting things done in my chamber and not worry about the things outside of it. And so, you know, we're still trying to push forward. I have not given up on this yet, even though we're winding down.
I was really surprised early on in the legislative session when there was a subcommittee that it was a unanimous decision, right? It was 5-0. And, you know, this is an election year, and lots of people were saying that you can't get a gas tax passed in a non-election year. or in an election year. So, I mean, it had momentum for a while, and you have brought it up again recently, but that also fell by the wayside.
Yeah, you know, I put an amendment of a bill, Department of Revenue bill here in the last couple weeks, and I think the bill's maybe now dead because of the amendment that got put on it. So, you know, we're looking at putting this amendment back onto the transportation omnibus bill that'll be coming up either this week or next week. But, you know, and one of the things you mentioned early on, Clay, is one of the questions to your listeners was, how is this going to affect you financially? And, you know, and there's some rough numbers that have been run on this. And, you know, it's hard to give an exact number because fuel prices fluctuate and things like that. But, you know, we've been hearing anywhere from that $50 to $60 range annually in terms of an increase that people will see for the average Iowan that drives. I would ask people to also think about, you know, what does it cost for your mechanic to realign your vehicle per hour? What does it cost to have a tire replaced? What does it cost to have shocks and struts and things like that? I've actually had a school district that one of their highest priorities at the beginning of the session when I met with them was the fuel tax because of what they pay for bus repairs on those buses on these roads, and they're taking a horrible beating each and every day.
Senator Bowman, what's the climate like for this in your chamber?
Well, I think it's very similar to what Representative Burns is facing. You know, when I talk about this issue with my constituents, I like to ask, how many of you want good quality and safe bridges and roads? And all the hands go up. And so it depends how you're asking the question in regard to this issue, because if there's an issue out there, and we certainly have been communicated that there's an issue in regard to the number of miles of highways that are in need of repair and the number of bridges, somewhere around 20% of the number 25,000 bridges we have need repair. And so that part is factual. The governor set out a commission. The commission came back and said, this is what we recommend. And then we went through a year of trying to finagle, you know, kind of a neutral thing. If we get a big commercial property tax bill, in lieu of raising the gas tax, it would be more viable. And so we did that. Nothing happened. And so now we're back at the table. We're looking at different options in regard to what we can do. In my neck of the woods near eastern Iowa, I'm very sensitive, since my dad owned and operated a gas station for 53 years, of neighboring states, Wisconsin and Illinois being less than 30 miles from my hometown. You know, we want our border gas stations to be competitive with other states. And both Wisconsin and Illinois are looking at increasing their fuel tax, and it's already higher than Iowa. I like to speak of this because I think it really resonates to Representative Burns' point that when I went to Chicago, I paid 9.6 cents per mile in Illinois to use their roads. To use that same distance of road from Maquoketa to Des Moines cost me 0.7 of one penny. And so non-residents are getting a bargain when they come into Iowa. And so what the fuel tax would do is allow non-residents to help contribute to our road repair.
Somebody wrote in saying that they filled up their minivan the other day. Gas cost $3.75 a gallon. Is timing everything with a measure like this? Easier to get it approved when gas prices are lower, but then again, gas prices aren't likely to go down significantly anytime soon. When is the best time, Representative Burns?
You know what? We can have gas prices fluctuate 10, 15 cents overnight, and people still have to put the gas in and whatever. But, you know, I don't know that there ever is, you know, a good time. I mean, you know, had we done this, you know, a couple years ago, it would have been cheaper. And I know at that time when Representative Jepkes was the chair of transportation, one of the things they told him is they said, well, gas prices are kind of high right now. Well, if you look at where they were then, where they are today is actually a bargain. We should have done it then. So, you know, I don't think you can base it off of that because, you know, at the end of the day, the roads aren't going to fix themselves. They're not getting any better. You know, last night up in northern Iowa, all day yesterday, we got nothing but rain. And then last night, temperatures dropped down into the freezing, and we got snow this morning. This morning, we've got ice and salt. We got road plow, or we got the plow trucks back out on the road. But you're getting that water down in those cracks. Now we got rapid expansion. I mean, we live in a state in which our roads take a lot of abuse just because of the seasons that we encounter. And they're not going to fix themselves. They're not going to get any better. The bridges aren't getting any better. Guthrie County, I know, has got multiple bridges there that have been embargoed. They actually have multiple bridges that are full wooden bridges. I mean, really, we're in 2014, and we still have wooden bridges out there that are built in the early 1900s. I mean, we have got to put some funding into this to get ourselves modernized in terms of our infrastructure.
Well, and it's interesting, too, just to see the language that sometimes gets associated with this. I know the governor at Transportation Day last year here at the Capitol referred to this a lot as a user fee, to not use the terrible T word there with taxes. You know, and I think back to the 2012 election when Leonard Boswell was facing Tom Latham, and I couldn't turn on a TV without seeing an ad from an outside spending group targeting Boswell for raising, you know, wanting to raise the gas tax. So, I mean, it is kind of a political hot potato in an election year.
And that's what drives the political part of this, where our leadership says until we have bipartisan support in each chamber that they're not going to move forward. And that's where we're at right now, trying to get Republicans, a majority of the Republican House, majority of the Democrats in the House and likewise in the Senate, all on board, so the finger-pointing isn't the issue.
Well, Governor Brand said in 1989, raise the fuel tax. He won by his largest margin of victory in his next election. Ronald Reagan raised the fuel tax and won his next victory. You know what? If this is an issue that gets me unelected, so be it. It was an issue worth going down on.
Peg writes in, the real issue for bridge issues is large equipment, farm, manure wagons, etc., using roads and bridges not built for their size. Instead of taxes for cars, there should be a dedicated tax license fee for all oversized equipment, tractors included. What do you have to say for
what
Peg
thinks? Well, you know, first of all, and I understand, farm equipment's gotten bigger, but I think people also have to understand, we're not going back to the days of everybody having a Farm All H and a Farm All M and a two-row corn picker. I mean, those days are over. But that's how our infrastructure was built. And things have gotten bigger, and they're going to continue. I don't know how much bigger we can get on some of these, but that is the reality. One thing I'd like to point out, though, and sometimes, you know, some people do point the finger at the agricultural community. You know, it's an $80 billion part of our economy is agriculture. You know, our farmers currently are paying about $153 million towards secondary roads across the state of Iowa through their property taxes. So, I mean, you know, they are paying into this system, and they do pay a lot in the secondary road system through the property taxes that they pay. So I would just be cautious in starting to do a finger pointing on this, because I think it's an Iowa issue, and we need to address this as Iowans, not as different factions.
As soon as we start pointing the finger and trying to set up some type of policy that only taxes a particular group, it falls apart here, being like no different than trying to change the formula. One of the things that viewers should know is the amount of revenue that one penny generates is around $20 million. So to increase fees and permits on a particular group, it's going to be difficult to raise the $200 million that is needed. According to the DOT study, it'd be a shortfall on that.
Samantha tweets in, I was in North Dakota, and it made me grateful for Iowa roads. They're much better here, but I'd support a tax to make them better. So I guess don't drive up to North Dakota then. So if this is going to fall by the wayside again this session, I mean, again, is this just one of these conversations like the texting while driving bill that you guys are going to keep having and pull your hair out?
You know, I think it'll be interesting. We'll know more. We'll know more. We'll know once the session's done if we could get it. If we can shake things loose and get folks to allow us to take this vote, we'll know. And if we don't get that done, we will know next year if let's just say hypothetically Governor Branstad gets reelected, and we'll know at his State of the State speech if he comes in and says we need to do something about infrastructure never got mentioned in this year's State of the State speech, not one word about it. So we'll know when that happens next year if he starts talking about this. I'll know that it was probably a little bit politicized, and B, I know it'll probably happen. So,
and it might be a priority if your colleague, Democratic Senator
Jack
Hatch,
has already gone on record saying he supports a fuel tax and has a position paper written for any of the viewers that want to see what his vision is for our infrastructure in the state of Iowa.
So moving on here, what are some of the other things that have happened this year in your transportation committees that you feel was something that moves you forward in within the confounds of the transportation committees in which you represent Representative Burns, Senator Bowman.
You know, we did a bill that dealt with the traffic cameras and addressing that. You know, the traffic cameras is still a hot button issue, and I don't know if you guys saw what they did in was it Nebraska or South Dakota? South Dakota, actually, their governor signed a bill that said that, you know, if you're from South Dakota and you violate the cameras in Iowa, that we can't go after them if they're in South Dakota. So I think that's a little bit of a slippery slope in terms of relationships with neighboring states. But so we did have a bill that, again, tried to address that. What I wish would happen with that bill is I wish everybody would sit down at the table and have a good conversation about it.
Okay. Unfortunately, that's where we're going to have to end it. River to River is produced by Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from John Pimble. I'm Clay Masters. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. ¶¶